picture on radio,
Do you prefer writing it to saying it?
Well, it's so different, Larry. I enjoy radio very much, but I find radio so easy for me. It's kind of like I feel like I'm cheating on life. Another thing too, I think at a certain point, if you are a storyteller, remember I'm a storyteller. If I was, say, a Larry King, that would be different. That is my medium. But a storyteller is a different kind of a creature, and he wants to have his work preserved. He wants to have people in England here read him. I began to write in Playboy. I wrote 30 or 40 stories, and it was a tremendous feeling for me to go to India one time and find that at the university there in Madras, they'd collected all my short stories, and they had an illustrated course on them.
But don't you miss...
And this is important to me.
Maybe this is asked by someone in the business who would miss it. But don't you miss verbal communication?
No, because I'm a stage performer. That's what I missed in radio. See, I didn't come into radio as a radio person, Larry. I had done nightclubs. I was in reviews.
You're an actor, right?
Yeah. In fact, the first thing that I did in New York was not radio. I did a review down on Madison Avenue at 32nd Street in a hotel there called the Hotel Duane, and they had a nightclub called Down in the Depths, and it was a review that was produced by Paul Mazursky, who later went on to be the big movie producer. Well, Paul at that time had just discovered he wasn't a comic. He was going to be a producer. And he produced
discovered
this
by No Laughs, right?
Yeah, No Laughs. He's the first guy I've ever worked with who tried to go out on the stage and entertain people, and it was a negative laugh. I mean, it was more than No Laughs. It was a kind of you could feel a wave of incredulity coming from the audience. You mean I'm paid for this, you know? So anyway, Paul's a nice guy and talented guy, and he designed... No, I didn't go from that into radio. I did New Faces. I was in Leonard Sillman's cast of New Faces of 1960 with Marion Mercer and R.G. Bond. And I just sort of, as a performer, somebody said, well, radio? Do some radio, too. So I said, fine, just another meeting with me. Well, overnight, that darn radio show I did in New York, as well as at the same time playing at a club and playing colleges, that radio show hit. As you know, that thing I did in 19... And from that minute on, people thought I was a radio man. It just threw me, because I'm a performer.
You're a performer and a writer, but you would agree... You would have to have done this 10 years ago. If we went around places 10 years ago, outside of New York agreed, inside of New York, if you went around and said Gene Shepherd, they would say radio.
Oh, sure. And that's what made me leave radio. You see, because I began to see that radio as a comic, for example, as a humorist, I could entertain somebody for 45 minutes and did it. I mean, I'd have people rolling on the eye, you know, on the floor, 45 minutes. That would never be mentioned by the Times. Never be mentioned. Some guy comes on the David Letterman show, for example, and does 2 minutes and gets a laugh, and overnight he's a star, you know. And I'd say to myself, well, why am I dripping out my life on this radio?
It was frustrating.
Well, yeah, and it also, I felt artistically at a certain point, radio changed, too. This is important, Larry. When I began to see the change when the program director, when I first went into radio, was always a vice president. And I mean a serious, heavy vice president. Then when I began to see that he became slowly more like an office boy, and the salesman was the vice president, I realized I was not in an art medium, I was in a sales medium.
Aha. Uh-huh. It ain't the money, it's the money. Gene Shepherd's our guest. We'll trace all the beginnings. We'll talk about the new book, Fistful of Fig Newtons, the film, coming on March 16th on PBS. I will tell you that all our lines are going, which is really weird. If you get a busy signal, please hang up and call back. If you're getting a ring, just stay on the line. This is Larry King in Washington, coast to coast on Mutual, back with Gene Shepherd after these messages.
You're listening to The Larry King Show. Once again, here's Larry.
My guest is the extraordinarily talented Gene Shepherd. His newest book, it's his fourth, A Fistful of Fig Newtons, published by Doubleday's. Articles appeared many, many, many times in Playboy and other periodicals. His film, which he wrote and starred in, we'll ask about that in a while. The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters will appear on the PBS Network's American Playhouse on March 16th. This is the Larry King Show in Washington with Gene Shepherd. What took you east? Everyone who knows you associates you with Herb Schreiner back home again in Indiana.
Yeah, but you know, Herb Schreiner was doing all that Indiana stuff in New York. If you're in show business, Larry, there ain't nothing you can do in Hammond, Indiana that's more important than, say, delivering the Hammond Times. In other words, everybody in show... good question. But do you know where Jack Parr comes from?
No. I know him, but I don't know where he comes from.
Okay. These are little trivia questions. You know where Marlon Brando comes from?
Marlon Brando comes from extreme Midwest.
Cleveland. Do you know where... do you know where Bob Hope comes from?
Cleveland.
In other words, when you grow up in the Midwest, there's only one place you can go, and that's away from there. If you're in show business, you don't stay there.
Except Chicago, second city, would have been.
Well, yeah, but they all come, you know, Bellucci, all those guys come, ultimately their goal is to get to New York or L.A.
When you went to New York, did you go with a job?
Yes.
I
actually did. I I had gotten an offer from NBC to come and possibly do The Tonight Show. Believe it or not, that was when The Tonight Show was like the graveyard. I also had an offer from Leonard Sillman to do New Faces.
Where had they seen you work?
Well, I did a television show in Cincinnati on a late night called Rear Bumper. And it was a comedy show. It was a one-man comedy show in which I would occasionally use actors who never spoke. It was meme, and it was all done with rear screen projector. Very wild show. It was often compared at the time with Ernie Kovacs.
So I was going to ask you about it.
And I had never seen Kovacs at that point, but when I came east, we became close friends. We both worked in Philadelphia later together.
Do you think that all you'd have attained would have, this is, would have to be a hypothetical guess, would have been attained had you not gone on the radio?
I would suggest that had I not gone on the radio, I would probably be one of the four or five, well, I don't want to say it, but I would have, well, I was on my way to becoming a big-time actor. In fact, one of the leading directors, Robert Brown, Bobby Brown, who was a big stage director in New York, and Audrey Wood, who represented Tennessee Williams, and she's a great, a legendary agent. William Inge, all that, those people. And one night I did a show. I did a legitimate theater thing down in the theater down in the village called the Theater de Lys. And it was a two-man show, basically. It was myself and George Siegel. George. And we did a show where it was called Asylum, written by Arthur Culpit. And this was when I was really seriously into acting.
It's a wonderful play.
It is. And... George and I originated those roles, by the way, in Asylum. Well, after the fifth or sixth performance, Audrey called me in. I didn't even know Miss Wood. She's a legendary. Very difficult to even see her. She was one of those people like going getting an invitation to see Buddha or something. And so she said, Gene, she said, I want to tell you, she said, if this opens the way it looks, you'll probably be the hottest actor in New York, and that means the world. I said, well, I can't believe this is fantastic. And I don't want to go into the machinations of what happened with the play, but had I not been siphoned off on the radio, I suspect that's where I would have gone, and very seriously.
And honestly, believe you would have been a major actor.
Well,
yeah. Okay, are there days...
Who knows?
Are there days you say, I would like to do some serious theater?
Absolutely. To me, this is what I have always done. In fact, all my radio work was theater. I had a persona. When I went in, I wasn't Gene Shepherd. People who know me knew the difference between the character I played on the air, which was the Gene Shepherd people heard, and the Gene Shepherd that I am.
Yeah, you had to be, because most successful performers on media are themselves. You were playing someone.
I was playing a character.
Can you tell me, describe him?
Yeah, well, all right. He was a guy who basically didn't give a damn for most things. He was hip, cool. would walk into the Museum of Modern Art, the first thing he would think of is, what painting should I stand in front of that will attract the most women? And then I can say profound things about it. And when I say these profound things, she will think I'm a very sensitive person. And 15 minutes later, we're on our way down to my pad in the village discussing Picasso.
How did you get that wonderful idea to begin every show with that overture of the Lone Ranger?
That was, that was an interesting story, really. I did a television show in Cincinnati. That started in Cincinnati.
And you did it there?
Yes. In fact, that, if you remember the theme sounded like a bunch of horses galloping. And actually was. It was Edward Strauss is what it was. And the theme, it would start out with a racetrack theme. It actually had the bugle. My theme would come on and millions of people would listen. Well, how that started is that I did a TV show that was comedy, but it was sponsored by a beer company called Bay Horse Ale. And they wanted something that sounded like horses. It was Bay Horse. Well, I said, that's a really dumb idea, because you don't want people to think of horses when they're thinking of your beer. They can get the wrong idea, you know. You'll have to think about that line.
I got it.
She's sitting there so innocent. What does he mean? Well, anyway, I began to use this theme. They wanted that theme because it really reminded people of horses. And I would come on and say, and on the screen, as that theme would play, we designed a logo. It was great. We had thousands of horses going across the screen in black silhouette. And in the middle of it all, you saw this guy running, trying to keep up with them. That was me, of course. I was in a silhouette, just a little character. And these horses endlessly running across this guy, trying to keep up with them and losing, obviously. And the theme would end, and these horses would go off into the distance. You see this little figure. He's still running along, and it's obvious that man is being outdistanced by the animals.
Your show, that radio show, was syndicated. I used to listen to it in Miami. You went on many stations with it. One would think that should have grown larger nationally. We now know that you can certainly, if this is proof, do a network
show.
Did.
I was on, at one time, at one time I was on about 200-300 stations, but it began to eat up my life. See, you've got an interesting thing here. You've got a network. But when you're involved in syndication, somebody has to mail the tape out to each individual station. Then the tape has to be mailed back. Oh, I'll tell you, it's like building the George Washington Bridge out of toothpicks.
What, if anything, was planned about that show every night?
Oh, I knew what I was going to do every night. See, I as an actor, yeah.
Well, it didn't sound that way, and that's to your credit. It sounded like this was, what am I thinking about? I'll do this tonight.
Well, Larry, let me say that as an actor, I'll tell you this, let's forget radio. As an actor, I've always felt that any actor, when you're watching an actor, you should never be conscious of his acting. You should watch this actor, and it should sound as though everything he's saying, he has just thought of, because that's the way it would be in life. You know,
Hamlet. What De Niro accomplishes.
Right. Hamlet did not have a script, you know, originally. and I've always striven for the feeling that everything I do is off the cuff. Now, this can work against you, because most people like to see the machinery. And so the worst actors in America are always given credit for being great actors. They're scenery chewers. It's awful. You say, look at his acting. Isn't that wonderful?
Do you feel that you have, as I'll use a comparison like Mel Torme might have in music, a huge cult following? In other words, you are not a household name.
Oh, no.
But you have an enormous following. How would you describe that? Your niche in America.
Well, I think that's true of almost every... it's just like Thurber. James Thurber, you know, we kind of accept that name as sort of great. But Thurber, when he was working, you know, Larry, had a certain number of people who followed him. He's a humorist. He's never going to be, because of the nature of his work, he's never going to be Harold Robbins. It's a specialized taste. And
now we have named him as an entity, but at the time he was...
Oh, no.
Cultish.
My mother wouldn't have known who Thurber was at his time, career. And I suspect right now, listening today, there's a lot of people sitting out there saying, who's Thurber? You see? So Robert Benchley was another one of those.
Do you want to be broader than that? Do you want to be Bob Hope?
Well, I suppose everybody secretly would love to own the world, Larry.
No, I mean, there are some who like the niche they have.
No, I
don't want that large niche.
Well, I never think about that. I mean, that would be kind of... I think that's rationalization. I think if you really scratch some of those guys that say that at 2 o'clock in the morning and shake them, say, come on, wouldn't you love to own the world? So, yeah. Then I'll say, oh, what did I just say? Say, oh, my... Magazine knows my stories. Like,
by the way, do they have first call on your stories?
Yes. In fact, for years I was carried on the masthead as a contributing editor, which meant basically that they had first, you know,
puzzle, fistful of figures. If my memory serves me correct, I saw this in a bookstore 5 months ago.
Yeah, it came out in October. That is a puzzle. I can't answer.
Why now, then?
I can't answer why the New York Times took 5 months to review it. I really don't know. In fact, my editor, whose name is Harold Kubler, he's been my editor for 15, 20 years. Wonderful guy. Incidentally, he's the leading editor in America of Westerns. Now, that's a real specialty. Harold knows every Western writer of any stature. You know, God, that's a real specialty in writing.
But why late?
Well, nobody knows. I talked to Harold 2 weeks ago. Harold called me and he says, are you sitting down? And I said, yeah. He says, the Times has called. They're doing a major review. Now, that's serious. A major review. It was a major review.
Did Doubleday plan a big tour for you with this book when it came out?
Yeah.
Did you do a big tour in October?
No. A number of reasons why. One, we were working on this movie.
I want to ask about that in a moment.
Yeah.
We're going to pause for news headlines, a word from your local stations. As we said, all our phones are going and have been since we came on the air. We appreciate your patience. If you're getting a ring, let the line keep ringing. If you get a busy signal, hang up and call back. My guest is Gene Shepherd. It can be safely said he is one of a kind. His book is Fistful of Fig Newtons, and The Great American 4th of July and Other Disasters will appear on PBS March 16th. We'll ask about that. This is Mutual, your network for news and sports.
From the nation's capital, you're listening to The Larry King Show. Portions of this program are repeated in the Pacific Time Zone. Once again, Network Radio's number one interviewer, Larry King.
Thank you very much, Fred Lowry. My special guest tonight is the one and only Gene Shepherd. His new book, published by Doubleday, is A Fistful of Fig Newtons. Do you title your own books?
Of course.
Right. What is A Fistful of Fig Newtons about? I do not imagine it is about the cookie.
No, it's about a great...
I have that hunch.
It's about a great derby. It's a tremendous athletic contest that took place at 2 o'clock in the morning in a Midwestern university dormitory between four men who were being consumed by boredom. It was a Friday night, and it was raining hard. And all of a sudden, one of them announced that he had hidden under his bunk a two-pound box of Fig Newtons. And the four of them sat there and ate the box of Fig Newtons. The rain kept coming down, Larry. And outside, you could see across the campus square, you could see an arrow pointing down at Joe's Route 41 Diner. And you could see that red arrow just saying, eat, 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 eat. And they kept sitting around eating. It was 2, 3 in the morning. And then an intellectual from the floor below came wandering up, who was a history major, tall, thin, 6 feet 4, 85 pounds. He looks in at the crowd and he says, are you gentlemen all enjoying these Fig Newtons? And I said, yes. He said, any of you care for a sporting venture tonight? And the four of them looked up, one of whom, by the way, was a Big Ten tackle. He was ready for any kind of sporting ventures. And he said, what kind of sporting venture? He says, well, I have here a box of, well, some would call it a laxative. It is also said by some that it is a delicious chocolate-flavored medicine. We're going to have a contest tonight.
Okay.
Who can stay in the room the longest?
Now, how did that... Can you... The hardest thing to explain, the birth of that idea.
The birth of that idea. Well, it came from a thing that happened to me in the Army. I was in a radar company, Larry, and we were isolated. This was like MASH. We were isolated millions of miles from civilization in a steaming jungle where the temperature was 200-300 degrees. And at late at night, you could hear the sound of bull alligators looking for business sexually. You hear this roar out in the darkness. We were bored, covered with mosquitoes. And somebody discovered that the Coke machine, when you put a dime in for a Coke, a bottle would come out, and there was a name of a city on the bottom. It would say Cleveland, or it would say Detroit. And so a betting pool began to build up. Who would get a bottle from the furthest away this week? And by the end of the week, there would be maybe $500,000, $700,000 riding on this. And it hit me one late at night that boredom, I think, is one of the great motivating forces in the world. I think people fight wars because of boredom.
I'm going to agree. You're probably right.
And that's the story of these guys did this insane thing out of pure boredom. Boredom is a greater motivating force in people's lives than sex or anything.
Fistful of Fig Newtons, I would gather now, is expected to be one of your better sellers.
Well, I hope so, you know. You never know, Larry. Although it is selling very well, Doubleday's delighted.
What is the great American 4th of July and other disasters in which you both appear in and wrote?
Well, Larry, I did a show, a movie. See, this is done in strict movie style. We shoot it on film. It's not done as a television show. It's edited as a movie. It was written as a movie. Different kind of scenes than they do on television. Short, quick movie cuts. We shot it all out in location. It is a sequel to a film which I did for PBS, a series called Vision, back 1977-78. And they came to me and asked me if I would submit. There were something like 13,000 scripts submitted for that series. Luckily, I was one they picked, and it was a film, a comedy, called The Phantom of the Open Hearth, like steel mill hearth. Got a lot of attention, and it was nominated that year by the Academy of Motion Picture, well, actually the Television Academy, and the TV Critics Circle as one of the three best comedies of the year. The other two were Mary Tyler Moore and All in the Family. So it was pretty good company, and it was a real success, and it played in Europe and the Cannes Film Festival. And so this film, this is what we're getting to, is the sequel to that one. That one occurred in June. It was about a prom, this family. It's about a prom, the kid going to the prom. This is July of the same year, the same family. Jimmy Broderick plays the father.
You are such a good and talented writer. And Paul Newman told me once that if he sees two good scripts in 7 years, that is a cause for a parade. Why haven't you written major feature films?
Because I was on the radio. You answered your own question. No, I mean that seriously. I've seriously gone into writing now, and I think that my next genuine effort, my next project, is going to be a major film. What we want to do is write the third sequel. This is going to be a trilogy, and the third one will be a film for, say, Fox or something. It will not be on television.
When you know you can write and you know you're funny, and you watch things that are not funny, either in movie houses or in situation comedies, that would drive me up a tree.
It does drive me up a tree. In fact, my wife here, Lee, from time to time, she will say, I'll be watching something, and I'll say, I cannot understand how these guys get away with this. And she'll say, I know why. And I'll say, why? She says, because it's a TV show. In other words, she says they're doing it because it's TV. And it's a good point because...
It's an insult.
Well, to me, I think a lot of things, though, to be in real fairness, Larry, that a lot of things start out a lot better than they wind up. And somebody who has written a good script winds up having it rewritten by the actor, who, by the way, is never a writer, hardly, but he wants his character to be more interesting or what he thinks is more interesting. So in the end, you know, you can often wind up with a terrible mishmash. And the writer, it really isn't given much power, you know.
Why do you also appear in this one?
Well, you'd have to see it to understand it. Because, there's another thing about humor, particularly film humor. Almost all great humorists, and I'm certainly not putting myself in that category, but almost all great humorists have found that to get the humor out of what they do, they have to perform it themselves. Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, and one of the best contemporary examples is Woody Allen. You know, when I first met Woody, I was in that review with Paul Mazursky. Woody had written three of the sketches in it. He was doing no
Woody
performing.
Woody worked for Fred Allen.
Yeah, he was doing no performing whatsoever. And so finally, when he got to do films, and he did his first film, he had Peter O'Toole in it. And it was a bomb, a terrible bomb. You could see that O'Toole couldn't get the humor out of it, that Woody Allen... Woody played a little character in this thing. And somebody said, well, why in the world aren't you playing that character instead of Peter O'Toole? And he did.
My guest is Gene Shepherd. Gene Shepherd, the new book is Fistful of Fig Newtons, published by Doubleday. And we will all watch on March 16th, the Great American Fourth of July and other disasters on the American Playhouse series on PBS. We'll be back following these messages. My guest is Gene Shepherd. The new book is Fistful of Fig Newtons. And the movie will be on March 16th on PBS, The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters. Since you have, in a sense, criticized media, that radio kind of, in a sense, stifled you, that television is non-productive, is it going to get better?
No, Larry, I hope nobody says I criticize radio. No, not at all. Radio is a great medium, and I've just felt that over the years, since the decline of network radio, it's given less opportunity for people who are, say, comics or that kind of performer. Your show, for example, is could only be on radio, and it's a super show for radio. But if you take, say, a Bob Hope, you can't imagine Bob Hope doing a local radio show.
No. But see, now there's a tied back. You could do
well, there may be a tied back, but that'll... At this point, I feel that there is so much more opportunity for what I do right now in the film media. That's the media that really interests me.
Do you like doing stories? You said the radio show you were acting about real people, real situations, your friends, the corner, the block, the car, the father, the mother, the house. So is that acting?
Well, yeah, but what I did, though, over the few years, you know, I knew Bill Cosby. He and I both played down in the village, and he did stuff about, you know, his friends. He says, you know, people come up to me and actually think I knew a guy named Fat Albert. Of course, he created this character, but he is a composite of a lot of guys he knew. And that's the way my stuff is. I couldn't honestly tell you how much I resembled the character that was the eye in there, or how much the... My father, by the way, was totally different from the father I've created. But he was a kind of composite of things that my father did or occasionally said.
Well, you had to be then a great actor, because you convinced me, who did not know you that, as an actor, that all these things were real people.
Well, that's also part of the essence of radio. See, radio, I think, has a quality I suppose you might say immediate impact, and what the kind of word I think is a kind of a pompous word, but it has verisimilitude, which is a kind of dynamic truth. You hear John Gambling, he gives you the time. You don't think he's kidding; he's telling you the time. I tell a story on the radio, you see, and everybody says, "Well, that's Shepherd talking about himself." But if you do it on a nightclub, they say, "Well, that's his act."
Yeah. They believe radio.
Yeah, they believe radio. And so for that reason, I found also there is a disadvantage to it. A disadvantage in the sense that your stories are so believable that people don't want to accept that you have created an act of creation. You have, in fact, you have been a creative artist. You've created characters. In fact, when my first book came out, Lee, I had a funny thing happen like that. The second book that I had was called Wanda Hickey's Night of Golden Memories and Other Disasters. That book is today used in thousands of colleges and creative writing courses and so on. But when it came out, it's a whole series of short stories, most of which appeared originally in Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
It was the second week it came out, it was a national bestseller and was on the Newsweek bestseller list. Now, it's difficult to hit Newsweek because they only have five. They have five nonfiction, five fiction books, and it's national. It's not New York. But here was what was funny. I was in the nonfiction list with a diet book, with some guy who tells you how to cheat on your taxes. And there's Shepard's book, and Wanda Hickey is on the nonfiction list.
That's a great credit to you.
Well,
might have pondered how to put you.
Except, though, here's the problem, Larry. You must realize that in the world of writing, being a creative artist, this is a very important thing. In other words, is John Cheever more of... John, if you put John Cheever's books, for example, maybe about all his neighbors, who knows, in the nonfiction list, he would no longer be a creative writer. He would be a reporter. It's a different function.
So we have had trouble, then, typing you.
Well, I think the radio made people that. See, the kicker of the story is this. That here I am on the nonfiction list, and nationally the book is selling all over the place, and I'm listed as nonfiction. And right in the front of the book it says all the characters in this book are nonfiction, everything else, which is true, see. They're all fiction. They're works of the imagination. So I call the editor, the book editor over there at Newsweek, and I said to him, I says, I just want to ask a question. I said, I'm delighted to see my book in your list. And he said, oh, it was wonderful. He said, I read it. I loved it. And I said, well, I have one question. Why am I in the nonfiction? There's a pause, and he says, what do you mean? I said, well, this is fiction. It's like putting John Updike's book in nonfiction because you believe the stories are so real that they can't be fiction. And he says, oh, come on, I've known people like that all my life. I said, well, that's a comment on fiction. It's so real. To me, fiction, the more fraudulent you get as a writer, the more you're considered artistic. You're considered creative. John Barth is unreadable to me. He's considered a great writer.
We're going
to... What a dumb world.
Yeah, never met a rhinoceros in a living room.
Yeah.
We're going to... Or a bear in the backyard.
And
we're
going to...
We're going to go to your calls at the top of the hour. We have a couple more questions for Gene Shepherd, and we'll return following this message. My guest is Gene Shepherd. We're going to go to your calls at the top of the hour. Again, if you're getting a ring, stay with us. Gene was mentioning something during the commercial which we should elaborate on. What is a storyteller?
Well, boy, that's a fantastic question. You know, Larry, that question has been... It's really what sets us apart from the animal world, you know. Animals have no sense of introspection, retrospection, or history. Animal has no sense of time. Do you know that?
Sure.
Well, that's interesting. We do. As we sit here, no matter what age we are, there's a time thing that extends ahead of us. We can see ourselves in the future. We know we will be, let's say, one day 65 or 70. An animal has no concept of that. We also knew that we once were 10. Animal has no concept like that either. So a storyteller is a person who assures all of those around him, you too have lived. He kind of distills all of the human experience that the tribe and it's a necessary thing. What does he do? Well, hard to say. They've been studying that in aesthetics for years. They don't quite know.
Was Mark Twain a storyteller?
At times, not always.
Is Myron Cohen a storyteller? No, Danny Thomas, is he a storyteller?
Well, I don't consider those people really storytellers. I think they're, yes, they are and they aren't. They're more, see, in our time, the storyteller has become, it's been showbizzed. In other words,
Danny Thomas is then a showbiz joke storyteller.
I think so. He is, but a true storyteller would be somebody who tells you a story and deep down inside you say to yourself, that's right. That's really right.
then there's nobody in showbiz per se doing that.
Storytelling, yes, in some ways. If you can call movie writing, there are stories. There are storytellers who can tell a great story and have done it in film. There's not much. You see, our media militates against that. If I were to go on the Johnny Carson show, for example. Now, next month I will be playing Princeton on stage. Do you know that when I play Princeton, I did that story, The Fistful of Fig Newtons, on stage at Princeton. As a performance, I play all the characters. I play them all sitting in this room in the dormitory. I play the rain. I play the sign that keeps saying eat. The entire story, and it holds the audience rapt, they love it, takes roughly 48 minutes to play. But it's a one-act play. You can't imagine me doing that on Johnny Carson, can you?
All right, now.
Between the Alpo commercial.
Not on Johnny Carson, but why couldn't you be doing it on CBS at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night?
You're talking about CBS television?
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Well,
why couldn't a man stand there,
well, because
tell a good story and be funny, and we wouldn't need all the schmaltz? Why couldn't
that?
Well,
I don't think it's schmaltz. See, when I play on stage, I'm different from radio.
But why couldn't the visual media do that?
It can't, because when you're working in visual, you want more than a man just standing there talking.
Why?
Well, because even in the ancient storytellers, you know, in Africa, for example, they would dress up in costumes.
You have to keep me visually interested?
Well, it's not so much that. You use everything you've got to tell the story. It's not a matter of just trying to keep you interested. For example, when I play on, let's say, Princeton, or when I work, Carnegie Hall show I did, we had a very elaborate lighting system, so that when I'm up there, I would walk from area to area, and each area I would walk into in the light, I would be another character. Now, I wasn't doing that to keep their interest. It was using everything I had to tell the story. Now, on radio, you don't have lights. You can't do that. So on radio, you notice when you didn't mention on my radio show, I would sing, I would hum.
Sound effects.
I would do sound effects, I would play the kazoo, I would play the jew's harp. I did everything to tell my story.
Tony Randall said, comedy is a very serious business.
It is.
Why do so many serious actors, damn good serious actors, have difficulty with it?
Well, because to play comedy, you must have a sense of humor. Many actors I know are very serious actors and have about as much sense of humor as a doorknob, because they take themselves too seriously. You have to be able to. It's just like if you're going to play golf, you better have a sense of rhythm. You better.
But if you're an actor, now Jack Lemmon, who's a great comedic actor.
Yeah.
Walter Matthau, a great comedian.
Both men, by the way, with tremendous senses of humor in their private life.
Obviously have to have that.
That's right.
But they play those people as real people. They don't say, I'm getting a laugh this line.
Well, you see my movie. We don't play it as comedy. All great comedy is played as though this man doesn't know he's being funny.
Why can't Marlon Brando do comedy?
Well, because now you're getting into some interesting thing. Comedy also requires a patina over the character that is in addition to the real character. In other words, you have to, I can't describe what you have to do except that I know what to do when I do it. But it comes from the fact that I understand why this guy's funny. Now, I've worked, now, in when we were directing this show, Jimmy Broderick plays the father in my show. Well, Jimmy is the one that played the father on the ABC series Family. Excellent actor.
Excellent.
Terrific. But he's Irish. Now, most Irishmen are born with a sense of humor.
True.
They really are. And Jimmy, when he first started to play the father, didn't see the humor in the father. He was playing it like he played that character on ABC. So I called him off to one side. I said, Jimmy, listen. I says, first of all, I says, this guy is about two notches on the dial away from being crazy. He is a madman. I said, Jimmy, now I want to ask you something. Do you have any idea what happens to this guy after this show? What do you think he does? I mean, after this episode. And he says, I don't know. I said, well, I'll tell you what he does. 2 years after this show, he leaves his wife for an 18-year-old girl and lives in Palm Beach.
He suddenly saw him. We're going to pause for news on the hour, a word from your local stations, and then your opportunity to talk to a genuine American talent, Gene Shepherd. The new book is Fistful of Fig Newtons. It is published by Doubleday. And on March 16th on the American Playhouse on PBS, you will see his The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters, written by Mr. Shepherd. He also appears in it. We'll be back right after the news with your calls for Gene Shepherd. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System, your network for news and sports.
Blatt's in his hand, and I can actually see them very clearly.
You have a question?
Gene, I just wanted to ask one thing. Did you really have a brother named Randy who snuck under the daybed all the time?
I do have a brother, interestingly enough, named Randy, but he's 6'2", and he looks a little like Kirk Douglas.
Thank you very much. Gene Shepherd, Kunkel, Ohio. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Two of the great storytellers in the history of radio on the same program, Larry King and Gene Shepherd.
Aren't you lucky, sir?
Gene, you told me and two of my friends to say the word Princeton if we ever came to see you, but that was over 18 years ago when you gave the address at the banquet for the graduating class at Princeton Theological Seminary.
Oh, for crying out loud, yes, that was a great evening, wasn't it?
It sure was.
In fact, here was the seminary. They were graduating, and the president gave up. He got up and gave a talk, the seminarians, and I said, well, we're going to hear from the other side now. I said, I am here representing the devil.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes, I sure.
And they went bananas, and the president fell right off the podium. I said, well, you can't have good without evil.
Your address was so extemporaneous. You saw the wall was decorated with black crepe paper.
That's right.
You got there, and you developed an enchanting address around that observation. And when it was over, out of the clear blue sky, you said to three of us, hey, the night's still young, you guys. How about going out for coffee?
That's right. I remember that. Were you were one of those guys?
Right, I was.
Oh, sure. I remember very well. And thank you for calling.
And by the way, you made us feel like we three were your honored guests and not the other way around.
You really were. I mean, let's face it. I was at the Princeton Theological Seminary, and there I was.
Are you a minister now, sir?
Yes, yes. I'm the pastor of the Presbyterian Church in Kunkel, Ohio.
What a nice memory.
That really was. Thank you for calling. I had a wonderful evening that night, and, you know, I often think about that. That was one of
the... It's nice the way you know you touch people, too.
Well, it's...
Marysville, Washington, for Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Yeah, good evening, Gene. Are you a ham radio operator?
Yes, K2ORS.
Oh, I had the delightful pleasure of hearing you at the Dayton Ohio Amateur Radio Convention 2 years ago when you played second fiddle to... Barry Goldwater. I was disappointed that Barry Goldwater wasn't there, but I delighted in hearing you. What are some of the names of the books that you've written?
Well, let's see. The first one was In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. The second one was Wanda Hickey's Night of Golden Memories and Other Disasters. And then there was The Ferrari in the Bedroom, which isn't listed on that.
It's not listed.
No, that because it wasn't Doubleday.
Oh.
Yeah, sneaky. And then the current one, of course, which is A Fistful of Fig Newtons.
And The Phantom of the Open Heart.
Yes.
One last question. Are you making any personal appearances these days?
Oh, sure. I'm playing Princeton in June. I just played Southwest Virginia Community College last week. And, yeah, I'm playing a lot of
book
dates.
Book tour, lecture tour?
Yeah, I play college dates as a comic. I don't go there for any other reason than
that. Gene Shepherd's our guest. The book is Fistful of Fig Newtons, New York City. Hello.
Hello, Larry. Thank you very much. It's because Shepherd that I'm listening to you tonight, because he started me listening to late night radio in New York, and I went to Barry Farber, and then finally you're around, so it's because of him that I'm listening to you, so you're that man of debt.
It's really addictive, isn't it?
Late night radio is terrible. You are Santa Claus was a disappointment. Easter Bunny, not real. That was a disappointment. You and your character's not real. I may not get over that. That's how real they come across.
Well, I'm pleased. And I was really pleased with the Times who came up and said that my characters are just as real on the page, and I'm delighted to hear that, you know?
And you were my reason I was allowed to have Playboy in the house. I said, Ma, I'm reading Gene Shepard's stories. It's a good reason. Larry, thank you very much. He's a great guest.
Thank you, he sure is. We'll be right back with the incredible Gene Shepard following these messages. Gene Shepard, we go to Houston, Texas. Hello.
Hello, Shep. How you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing in Houston, for crying out loud?
Oh, I used to listen to you on WOR, and I used to pick you up on a couple other FM stations. I used to listen to you three times in the same day. Tell me about your new book. Is it more adventures of hanging around Warren G. Harding School with
Well, this is a very interesting book. It's hard to say. It covers all the way from Army life through the life of Mr. Leggett and the Great Ice Cream War, and Schwartz and Flick and the gang going to summer camp. By the way, Camp Nabawawanaki. And it's a lot of stuff. What can I say?
Yeah, did you bring along your kazoo? Or
I do have my kazoo. In fact,
build out a few rounds of.
Yeah, I was going to suggest to Larry that I do The Bear Missed the Train tonight.
Right.
Do you have it with you?
The bear missed the train. The bear missed the train. The bear missed the train, and now he's walking.
Do you have your kazoo with you?
I do, and I have my jew's harp.
Can we be entertained in a couple?
Well, later on, when the kids are in bed, when
okay.
the grown-ups are still up, we may do it.
Family show. Chicago, Illinois, with Gene Shepard. Hello.
Yes, hello, Larry, and good evening, Mr. Shepard.
Oh, that's my hometown, you know.
Yes, I'm honored to be in it.
I love it. Isn't that a great city?
If you like to freeze to death, yes.
Oh, come on. Yeah, it's a toddling town, man.
I used to play trumpet over at your father's mustache back in 64.
Oh, for crying out loud, sure.
And we would interrupt your shows, as you may or may not remember.
I loved it. You were down the street, and I was down at the Limelight. Did you ever see anything like that crowd we draw every night?
It was unbelievable.
I was doing nightclub work that was actually being broadcast. I don't think anybody in the country to this day has broadcast weekly a nightclub show live. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. It was remarkable.
Right.
Where it was back.
Well, that was a real experiment, and it had a vast audience. And you played the trumpet, huh?
Yeah.
You still got that straw hat?
No, I ate the coat.
How about them sleeve garters?
Yes, to cut off circulation.
Oh, I'm glad you called.
There were a couple of things, Chuck, that you would never answer to me. I asked
that
a couple of times years ago, and I'd like to bring up, if I could, and put to rest for all at one time.
Okay.
I libertine.
Yeah.
There's all this talk going around. Ted Sturgeon wrote it. You wrote it.
Well, it was a joint effort. What we did was we decided that it was to be 18th century, and that's a long story. That would take us all evening, and I would not. I really don't think it's fair to take up Larry's show, a long discussion of that. But did you enjoy that whole episode?
Oh yes.
Well, I'm glad you're out there in Chicago. How's the weather?
Well, it's warming up. It's about 17 right now.
Oh, spring is on its way.
On the side. Philadelphia for Gene Shepard. Hello.
I'd like to ask you two things.
Yeah?
Do you remember a program on KYW that Jack Pyle, I think you had something to do with, and an agricultural man in the morning?
No, I didn't have anything to do with that. Jack and Bill Gibbons.
Bill Gibbons.
They did a show in the morning, but I was on late at night. We were just friends, that's all. I had nothing to do with their show.
Well, this show had old-time baseball players on, and it was late at night.
That's Jack Pyle.
Yeah. And it went to 6 o'clock in the morning. I thought it was one of the tremendous radio shows. Talk about Ritter's glory of their time.
Yeah, this was much better than Ritter.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember he used to sit there with pitchers that pitched in.
With the actual players?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, 1918 pitchers. It was really a fascinating show.
You have a second question, sir.
The second question is, I wonder if the people in Hammond, Indiana, now, since you've invented them, associate themselves with your invention?
You know, I'll tell you, that's...
Can't go home again.
A great question, and for years, I thought that they didn't even know I existed. And you know that last April, I got a letter from the mayor's office of Hammond, Indiana, which is a big city, as you know. It's 250,000. And I was made the man of the year in Hammond and given a medal to hang around my neck and a plaque. And the mayor, who went to high school with me, and he's on the same page in the yearbook with me, he really made it, you know, and he hung the medal on me. And so, yes, they do recognize me now.
Favorite son.
Right.
With Gene Shepherd, Everlast, Minnesota. Hello.
Hello. It's a great opportunity here to speak to my two favorite radio personalities. I know, Gene, you're sort of, from what you said, you're a bit down on radio, I would say. But it seems like whenever I went to high school and college, it's all we talked about the next day. Do you feel that the influence you've had, that certainly that was a great opportunity for you?
Oh, sure. I think you misinterpret me. I don't want to have it be said I'm down on radio. I'm saying as a comic and as a performer of my type, radio is not the ideal medium. For Larry, it's perfect, obviously. Yes, I know I've had an influence on a generation. In fact, the New York Times said that this 2 weeks ago.
They did.
And I think that radio, especially at that period in time, probably had more influence on young people as a way of thinking and looking at the world than any other medium, including rock, which is not a way of looking at the world, it's a way of hearing the world.
Because of the theater of the mind, that's...
Yes, absolutely.
Personal.
And kids at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning all over the country were lying in bed with their radios hidden under their pillows.
That was certainly the case.
You were kind of a catcher in the rye.
Yes. Yeah. The Baltimore Sun made that point. And kids, you know that I was a character in Jack Kerouac's novel, On the Road. I'm the angel-headed hippie. In Kerouac's book, and that, I think Kerouac had a fantastic influence on kids, too.
Oh, boy. But, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
With Gene Shepherd, Staten Island, New York. Hello.
Hi, Larry and Gene. How are you?
Hi.
Fine.
Okay, Gene.
Yeah.
I'd just like to echo the sentiments of that previous caller. He said he grew up with you on WOR, so did I.
And you know, so did I.
Right?
I was a mere stripling when I joined them.
Yeah. And I think that's what I can credit my listening to Larry tonight is starting with you. And
well, then, in other words, you say that we contributed to the slow rot of your head, eh?
Well, no, I don't think so. Not that at all.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for calling, compliment. Really.
Hollywood, California, for Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Hi, I'm honored to be the first lady caller of this evening.
You are.
I'm calling from Tinseltown, Hollywood.
Oh, Lord, I love it. I must say I do.
Shepherd.
Yeah, hi.
I'm also one of those kids who used to have, lived in New York at the time, had your voice under my pillow, listening to that intimate, cozy, reassuring voice of yours and manner. I had the pleasure of meeting you 25 years ago on a boat traveling to Fire Island with a photographer by the name of Roy Schatz.
Oh, sure, for heaven's sakes, yes.
And I was then attending the High School of Performing Arts. I was
Roy did the most famous picture ever of Jimmy Dean.
Yes, of all, many, many, many pictures of Jimmy Dean.
That's right.
But I was curious whether you knew if he was still alive.
I don't know. I haven't seen Schatz in years. I really wouldn't know. I knew Jimmy Dean, you know, back in those
you
days.
You did?
Oh, sure. He's from Indiana, too, you know.
He did a play on Broadway, didn't
right.
he? About a boys' school.
Exactly. He did a lot of things on Broadway. And at that time, I was going to the Actors Studio, and you know, we all knew Dean.
But you don't know if Roy Schott
no,
is still with
I
us?
I really don't know.
Well, I still want to say thank you
good
to
photographer,
you for all
by the way.
Wonderful moments that I spent listening to your melodious...
What are you doing in Hollywood, may I ask?
Excuse me?
What are you doing in Hollywood?
I came out here to Screen Test in 1964 and ended up staying here as a contract player at Universal. I have been in and out of doing performing in.
Well, see, the reason I ask
television.
Is that you have the voice of a performer, you know.
I do. Yes.
Well, of course,
you project.
You project, and thank you for calling.
Thank you for calling with Gene Shepherd, Jersey City, New Jersey. Hello.
You know, the great show, Mr. Shepherd. I really miss you on radio, and I love your stuff. And I was just wondering, toward the end of the program, I know you can't do it now, but toward the end of the program, would you relate to Larry, because you did on another show, and I was cracking up about a guy that you knew that was in the Army, was a flunky, and then when you went back to the Gary, Indiana steel mills to do a thing, and also about how you said your dad would give up after a month because the White Sox were 30 games in last place. I mean, I
was... We never gave up.
I know, but...
No, classic White Sox fan does not give up.
You say you're 30 games behind, but if we win three here, and they drop one out of three, we pick up a game and a half.
That's one of the big laughs I always get in my stage. I says, you know, you got to understand that being a baseball fan is a life-enveloping thing. I says, the old man would sit there in May. The birds are singing outside, and it's a beautiful day. The sun is shining, and the Chicago Tribune says the White Sox are 36 games out of first, and they've only played 28 games.
The real baseball fan, if Gene Shepherd is a real baseball fan, he could pick up the New York Times tomorrow, and the headline would read, Secret Life of Gene Shepherd Baird.
Oh, God.
And he would turn first to the box scores.
Exactly.
That is a baseball fan. Bayhead, New Jersey. Hello.
Hi, Shep.
Hey, there you are.
Hi, my name is Joni, and I'm president of the Bayhead, New Jersey branch of the I Love Gene Shepherd Society.
Great, and Scott.
I am a real Fig Newton. I have two questions for you.
Okay, Joni.
I've been writing to you for the past 8 years because I'm madly in love with you, and you've never replied to my correspondence.
Well, his wife opens the mail.
Joni, I don't want to get into the kind of trouble that you're suggesting in those letters, for heaven's sakes. And although, if we can work out something without putting it down on paper, let's go, baby, huh?
And secondly, are you planning any personal...
Yeah, I'm going to be playing Princeton June 6th.
Oh, I know that. We always catch you at Princeton.
Isn't that a wild show?
Oh, great. Are you going to ever come to the Jersey Shore and do any performances?
Well, I don't think
there's... Are you going to hit high C?
I doubt it. I'll be playing at Princeton, Clinton Museum, by the way. Clinton, July 17th in New Jersey.
Fine. I just want you to know that all the girls from the Bayhead branch sing Kissy Kissy, Gene Shepherd.
Oh, kissy kissy to you.
Jackson Heights, New York. Hello.
Hello, Larry.
Yes.
Great show.
Thank you.
Mr. Shepherd, first, I want to thank you for the many happy hours I spent listening to your show.
Well, I'm pleased that you enjoyed them.
But someone already asked my question about your appearing at Alexander Hall at Princeton.
Yeah.
So I'll be looking forward to seeing you there.
Listen, that's a wild show. That is a wonderful show because of that place. That place, by the way, Alexander Hall, Larry, is the kind of place to where they should sacrifice virgins. And you know, they can do a yearly play called The Hunchback of Notre Dame in there. It's a gothic pile.
Thank you. Houston, Texas, for Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Yep, I just want to say I'm another one of those people who grew up on you listening to you late at night. Two quick questions.
Yeah.
Years ago, you told a story about when you were in the Army, there was a guy, I think his name was Metropolis. There were two guys. One would get his uniform and wear it the way it was, and the other guy would get his uniform and tailor it.
Right.
You know, what was the guy's name?
Chris Metropolis.
Now, is that a true story?
No, sir. We're breaking your heart again.
No, that actually was. He's talking about a true story. I was talking about there's two kinds of guys in life. Guys that are conscious of what it's all about and the others. And Chris Metropolis was the first guy I met who 5 minutes after he's in the Army, he's in the tailor shop, he's got the greatest uniform, this side of Patton, right?
I have a question.
Yeah?
I don't remember this, but he did something at lineup in the morning after he did your calisthenics.
Right.
Or a belt or something.
No, what he did, he learned to make the sound of a chicken without moving his mouth.
That's right.
And we'd all be lined up there, and Lieutenant Cherry is out in the front, and the sun is shining, and he'd say, all right, men, he says, today we're going to have 20 minutes of PT, and after that we want to assemble out here, we're marching out, we're moving out to the range. And Metropolis, without moving his lips, would go,
are you going to ever be done doing anything?
You going to be in Houston?
I would love to play Houston. I've never been invited.
Well, okay, we got to break for news headlines right back. Lots more time to go with one of America's great humorists and great storytellers, Gene Shepherd, one of our fine writers as well. His new book is Fistful of Fig Newtons, got a rave 2 weeks ago in the Times. His movie, The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters, will appear on the PBS Network's American Playhouse the night of March 16th. Gene Shepherd, I'm Larry King. We're in your nation's capital. We'll be right back on the Mutual Broadcasting System, your network for news and sports. Thank you very much, Fred Lowry. Welcome back to more of the Larry King Show. Our special guest is Gene Shepherd. Doubleday has published his new book, A Fistful of Fig Newtons. And The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters will be seen March 16th on PBS. We'll go back to the calls in Buffalo, New York. Hello.
Hey, Shep.
Hey, there you are.
I've been a fan of yours for about 13 years.
Hey, great Scott. It's been tough, hasn't it?
Yeah, really been tough. The last five or six have been the toughest. I haven't been on radio. Missed you.
Well, I'm delighted, anyway, that you're calling.
Yes. I have a couple of questions. Are you going to be in the Buffalo area soon?
Not that I know of. I possibly am. You know, you never know who's going. In fact, I played the University of Buffalo a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, that's where I'm going to school.
A good school, by the way.
It's where Mark Russell does his terrific PBS live half hours.
That's a great school. I played Buffalo a couple of... You know, the first time I played Buffalo, you'll never guess who sponsored me there. The SDS.
SDS.
Yeah, you don't even know what they are, do you?
They don't even exist here anymore.
I know, but they did then. And,
What does it stand for?
You don't know the SDS?
Students. No, all we have is the SA, which is...
Students for a Democratic Society.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a wild outfit.
Oh, that outfit. I didn't even associate you with that.
Oh, yeah. Listen, in those days, I was...
A ringleader.
Yes, I wrote for the Village Voice. I wrote for a paper called The Realist, Paul Krasner's Realist. And, you know, that was a different world, wasn't it?
Yes. Also, are you still giving away autographed pictures if you get what DVD stands for?
Good Lord, you have a memory. Yes, I used to see, trivia began on my show, Larry, really did. And I said, look, I said, people always say, trivia, they're always asking stuff about movies. Who the hell cares about movies? I said, here's a piece of trivia. What does BVD stand for? All right, Larry, do you know?
No idea.
Yeah, BVD, everybody has heard of the underwear, BVDs, but what does those letters stand for? BVD.
You better tell us.
And I says, I will send you an autographed picture. And in fact, I will come on, and if you're a nice-looking lady, we'll have a date. If you can give us what BVD stands for. And he remembers that.
But what does it stand for?
Well, I ain't going to tell you.
Well, I have to admit, I cheat. I recorded a bunch of your shows a long time ago.
You did.
And whenever I'm sitting down here and feeling bored or something, I turn on Gene Shepherd.
Oh, that's a great compliment.
It is. It's the highest honor, and I thank you for the call. Syracuse, New York. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Hey, you going to give me that lady's address in Buffalo? I'd like to get a copy of some of those recordings.
She's pretty hip, isn't she?
I'll tell you, though, after about 12 years, it's really great to hear the golden voice there change.
12 years. I left radio LWR in 76, for crying out loud. No, in 78. I was there during the centennial and all.
I left New York back about 12 years ago. And
I guess you
were gone when I got back this way.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, did you know Larry has a touch of you there?
I've heard that, and I know it's true.
You know, he darn near killed me the other night. I'm driving down the road, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning after 14 hours out there. And
I love humor, I think.
Up with that baby tender story, and with the ice and everything else, I could do to keep from laughing and driving off the road.
Well, I'm delighted.
I'm glad there's some of us still around. Thank you very much. With Gene Shepherd, Milwaukee. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Shep, a couple quick things here. One, are you going to record the new book on Talking Book for the Library of Congress?
Good question. I recorded, he's asking a good one, because a lot of people read those books on those Library of Congress things. I did In God We Trust. Have you heard that one?
Yeah, that I've got.
And Wanda Hickey?
That I haven't got, but it's on order. I've got to learn how to cheat the local computer, but I figured that out.
Okay, and they haven't invited me yet to do it, but I hope they do, and if they do, I certainly will record it.
Those are invaluable.
Well, I suggest, as a subscriber to that series, I suppose you are,
yeah,
get in touch with them and request them to
ask me to record it for them.
Okay, I will.
In other words, write to them and say that Mr. Shepard would love to do it because this is a fantastic service for the sightless.
Yeah, I think also it's a special touch when the author reads the book because then you're going to literally get the author.
Well, if Gene does read his own, that's one of the rare because most authors do not read their books in the American library.
Well, I did In God We Trust, the whole thing.
I can't think of anybody else besides I've read.
Well, you know how long that took me to do it? That I recorded one chapter a week. And, well, yes, that's all the time they had. And it took me almost, I would say, about 6 to 8 months to complete that. Yeah.
Is that mostly just time to get to in the studio, or is that how long it took them? Took you to read it and to redo it so you were pleased with the result?
No, they only had around, after all, I had other things to do, too, don't forget.
They record a lot of things, magazines.
Yeah, that's right.
With Gene Shepard, Herndon, Virginia. Hello.
I'd like to know if any of the five things has or will change America significantly. One, interstate highways.
What in the world does that have to do with tonight's discussion?
Well, you've got your pulse on the country.
No, not me. I'm a humorist. I don't go around trying to solve the problems of the
Athens,
world.
Athens, Georgia. Hello.
I think you mean Athens, Ohio.
There you are.
Okay.
That's a good school town, by the way.
It's not a bad town at all. I kind of like it. Mr. Shepard, I've been a fan of yours for years. When I was in high school, I attended the press conferences.
Weren't those wild at the Overseas Press Club, right?
Overseas Press Club. Matter of fact, I think I still have one on tape someplace.
And the kids flying out the windows and
all those, they were crazy.
Yeah, and all those old reporters, guys like Bob Constantine sitting around saying, what's all this about, for God's sake?
I think they got a little upset at times.
They did.
I have a couple of questions to ask you.
Yeah.
I've been reading everything you've ever put out and have been looking for iLiberty, and I was going to ask you about that, but somebody stole it from me. But what I was going to ask you about is in the Ferrari in the bedroom, and previous to that, in the introduction to the 1929 Johnson Smith catalog, you wrote the story that you titled The Ferrari in the Bedroom, The Rosetta Stone of American Culture. I was a little disappointed, I guess, that it wasn't another news story in A Fistful of Fig Newtons because it was re-released there as the whole fun catalog. I'm wondering why you did that.
I can't understand what you're talking about. What are you saying?
Well,
because the whole fun catalog, in fact, there's nothing new in that book. Are you kidding?
Not what I'm saying.
You've never read it.
The story was previous in
yes.
Ferrari in the Bedroom.
Because this book,
why it was out.
Well, because very few people bought the All Fun catalog, for starters. There's probably you and six other guys got it.
No, I mean, it was in your book, The Ferrari in the Bedroom. And
no.
This Little Fig Newton.
No, you're wrong.
I have it here in front of me.
Sorry, it was not in The Ferrari in the Bedroom.
Excuse me?
The editor is sitting right here with me, and she says it is not in The Ferrari in the Bedroom.
Is not The Rosetta Stone of American Culture the same story?
No.
Okay.
You blew it again, kid.
Blew it again wrong.
Is when you were on WOR at one time, you were looking for an old tube radio, and you asked somebody to call up if they had one. And I did. I had an old National Union tube radio and gave you my name and address and phone number. And I still have it, and it works great, and I still want to know if you want it.
Well, at that point, I was deluged with about 5,000 people who sent me letters about radios, and I had a 1.5-room apartment. Does that answer your question?
We'll be back with Gene Shepard, the new book, Fistful of Fig Newtons. First, these messages. My guest is Gene Shepard. His new book is Fistful of Fig Newtons, published by Doubleday. His movie, The Great American, 4th of July and Other Disasters, will appear March 16th on PBS, Salt Lake City, Utah. Hello.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I just had to call up Gene and ask him a couple of questions, but first I want to tell you, Gene, one of my most cherished possessions is a record that you cut in about 1959 called Gene Shepard and Other Foibles. Do you remember that?
Oh, sure. That was cut for Elektra Records.
Elektra, right.
Right. And that's the one that's got the White Sox story on it.
Oh, it sure does. And I was wondering if I could just do number five, which is entitled Credit Cards, Larry. It only takes 1 minute.
1 minute. That's a very interesting piece.
All right, go ahead.
It's a collector's item. Go ahead and play it.
Okay. Here we go. May I ask you papers, please? Yes, I can hear Peter Lorre saying it now.
There is your papers.
Get out of me from that screen. There is your papers, please. And there is nothing, nothing that is more beloved of an American than
paper. A card of identity. A membership card. A card that says you're in. Really says you're in. You start this out when you're a kid. Send in the coupon. Become a member of the Jimmy Allen Air Aces. Make it. Get in. Gradually you begin to build this up. Until finally you get like some guys who have membership cards that come in long strings. I know a guy that has a string over 38 feet long that he carries in a roll under his arm in little plastic envelopes that are transparent. And he unrolls and he says, look, look at the money. See,
I saw people, they love me.
It's my credit card. Look, I'm
loved.
I'm American, look.
Isn't that beautiful, Larry?
Fantastic. Yeah, that was on an album that I did for Elektra, and you know... Excellent quality.
Well, do you know that ever since that time, I've tried to buy the rights back from that company, because other record companies, they haven't reissued it, you see, but they won't sell me the rights.
I've had that since 1959, and when my wilder days running around Chicago, if I meet a new girlfriend and I'd play that Gene Shepherd record, and if they didn't dig it, it was goodbye, honey.
You're a hard man.
Thank you. Thanks for playing it. We got a hell of an audience. St. Louis, Missouri, with Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Good morning. First of all, thank you. I was born in heaven, Indiana.
Oh, my Lord. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's right. Two questions.
Even worse than that, I was born in Hessville. They don't know the joke, do they?
Not at all. Two questions for the both of you.
That's like saying one guy was born in hell and the other guy admires him. He was born two levels below, right? Go ahead.
All right. If it could be worked out, and if you were asked, would both of you read your books? For the talking books for the blind.
That question was just asked.
Just as I would, if I'm asked, I would read.
Absolutely, I would. If somebody came to me, I did my first book for the talking books, you know, In God We Trust, All of Us Pay Cash.
I'll have to find that for the book.
Yes, ask for it. It's called In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash.
I don't think nobody could do it justice but you two.
Well, I'm on it. I do it. And I would do it. Wouldn't you, Larry?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Also, at the top of the 3 o'clock hour before Mr. Shepherd leaves, why don't you let him do your Bill Marble story?
I'm going to let him play the kazoo. That's a promise. Marlboro, New York. Hello.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
It's great to talk to you, Shep. I was at the Overseas Press Club and listened to you for a long, long time, and I intend to pick up the book this week. Two quick questions. One, why did you decide to use the fictional I in a lot of your work?
Well, because it is fiction. See, I think a lot of kids thought that I'm just telling literal truth, and I'm not a reporter. I'm a storyteller. It is. See, and I think when you use the I... You get the quickest, most complete communication with people. In other words, if I said, I was on fire yesterday, that's exciting. But if I said, that guy over there was on fire yesterday, that's a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I used the fictional I because it's a good literary device. Mark Twain used it. In fact, if you're curious, Huck Finn is in first person.
Mm-hmm.
Melville used it in Moby Dick.
Moby Dick.
So the first person is really we'll look at the Catcher in the Rye.
Mm-hmm.
Good example of it.
One more question, Gene.
Yep.
Quite some time ago, I saw the movie A Thousand Clowns.
Yes.
You want to comment on that? The character bears a striking...
Well,
Jason Robards.
Yes, Herb Gardner was a friend of mine at the time.
Mm-hmm. Herb.
And one of the critics pointed out, he was the critic of the Daily News, that it was quite obvious that character and the show was based on my life and my apartment and everything else. Herb and I...
You buy it?
Huh?
You buy it?
Oh, sure.
It?
Oh, yeah. I think Herb does, too. Nice piece, I thought that was.
Very nice.
Thank you for noticing the resemblance.
Columbia, South Carolina, for Gene Shepherd.
Hello. Gene Shepherd.
Yeah.
Great to talk to you. I just have two quick questions. Are you going to be making any appearances down in the South Carolina area?
You know, want you out there, Gene.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. The opening of my movie, watch it on public television, takes place in south of the border in South Carolina.
Wow.
You know the place I'm talking about?
Yes, definitely.
Well, then, you know, so watch it this 16th of March, and you'll... The last time I played South Carolina, I played Meredith College in Raleigh.
Uh-huh. I see. Yeah. Well, I'm from the Jersey area. I'm just going down to school down here. I'm from Hackensack, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And also, let me just say that your programs, both your programs and your short stories, have been they're great spirit uplifters. And anyone who's ever got the blues that just listen to one of your programs, they're a great, great cure.
Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you, and a kind call. Mill Valley, California. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Larry, Gene.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
Gene, I wanted to ask you, those old shows at the Limelight and the Village,
yeah.
Are those? Is there any way those tapes could be made available? I'd sure love to have an audio copy.
Well, that's... I have tapes of almost all of those shows. I have over 500 tapes, but there's no way to make them available commercially, no. And I would like to say, yeah, but no way. That I know of, unless some record company suddenly says, you know, gets sense in its head and says, let's reissue them as a as talking literature. You know, that the Cadman does a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. Gene, did you write as a kid? When did you start writing?
When did I start writing? Well, I don't really know. The first piece of fiction I ever wrote was for a magazine called Town and Country.
The magazine?
Yes, Town and Country. And I wrote...
They didn't print much fiction.
No, they didn't. I knew Henry Sell, though, and he wanted a piece of mine. And I wrote... the first fiction I really wrote was for the Village Voice. I wrote a series of columns in which I wrote, like, minute short stories.
Were you a writer in high school? Did you write for
the
school paper?
No, I was an athlete. I played football, yeah. I was not, and I was not a radio listener either, any of that stuff.
We'll be right back with Gene Shepherd following this message.
It's been a while since I've had a chance to talk with Mr. Shepherd. He doubtlessly would not remember it, but I was 11 years old. It was my birthday, and you were signing autographs in my hometown of Princeton, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And signed a big Excelsior in 1971 on my copy of Wanda Hickey, which is now well thumbed.
I'll bet you've read it, haven't you?
Four or five times. Just picked it up last night, as a matter of fact, to start reading it again.
You're amazed at how well it wears, right?
It's one of the greatest books I have ever read, and as I said, cherished. But I'd like to thank you very much. I grew up on your WOR radio shows, and I also saw that memorable performance of A Fistful of Fig Newtons in Princeton's...
You remember that, when I did that short story as a performance?
Oh, it will stick in my mind forever. It was about 250 very drunk reunion people. You know.
You remember the scene when I staggered across the stage as big number 79 after his final shot of X-Lax and you knew he wasn't going to make the door?
Oh, one of my loves. But I'd like to thank you very much. I'm now in radio.
Oh, yeah?
As an announcer, and I don't think I could have... My interest from the time I was 9 years old, listening with the radio under the pillow and my head full of scrambled eggs. That's...
Well, you remember the scrambled egg theory.
It holds true.
Shepherd said that all people's heads are composed of either cottage cheese or scrambled eggs until roughly the age of 18.
You're right.
And it slowly begins to coalesce, but you don't know that you have nothing but cottage cheese between the years at 17. Only later when you look back on it and you see, oh, my God, you know. Listen, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Hollywood, California for Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Good evening or good morning, Larry and Gene.
Hi.
Gene, I think I go back some time. I remember you from the old days at KYW in Philadelphia, and I used to drive down to the Penn Sheridan Hotel at 39th and Chestnut, and I think you were broadcasting from the lobby.
No, I broadcast from the town room. I was a
town kid. Room, was it?
Yes, not the lobby. For heaven's sake, it was a nightclub show I was doing.
Right. But anyway, I drove down. I thought it was the lobby. So many years ago.
I could see you were with it. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, they served drinks and whatnot.
It was either funny or a bellhop.
But he was great. He was great then, and I just. I could talk all night about Gene Shepherd because I just want to say this. In those days, I think it was 1951.
If you're going to talk as a Philadelphian, you got to say in them days.
In them days, yeah.
There
well, I'm
go.
Out in Hollywood for 10 years now, so I'm changing a little.
Right.
But I told everybody that I work with, you've got to listen to this guy, Gene Shepherd. He comes on at 10 o'clock, 10.05 at night, KYW. He is great. He's fantastic. Don't miss him. Stay up. Did you listen? The next day I'd question everyone. And they all said, yes, I listened, but I think the guy is nuts. Then I realized, now listen to this, Gene. I'm giving you a little mirror image of yourself. Then I realized that most of the guys I was associating with were nuts.
That's right, they were.
I think I matured then.
Oh, man, that's terrible to get this awful insight when you suddenly realize your best friend is truly a bum.
Anyway, thanks a lot, Hank. God bless.
Thank you. Gene Shepherd, Laurel, Maryland. Hello.
Oh, good morning. Good to hear the voice of Mr. Shepherd on the air again. Speaking of the ins and outs, do you remember the great analogy you once broadcast over WOR? Life is like a titration, and they're adding the drops?
Yes, I do remember
that one.
What a memory, for crying out loud.
I got a couple of quick ones for you.
Yeah.
First of all, it's rather down to hear that the old recordings aren't available. The old 59 recording, that small bit that was played out of the West, sounded great.
Well, it did.
Also, but it is uplifting to hear that the Library of Congress recordings are available. I'd like to get a hold of those.
Well, that's the talking books for the blind, you know. That's a specialized service.
Yeah, well,
Well, you know somebody in the Hill?
Maybe I'll try to make some friends real fast.
That's really
one second question.
Speaking of recordings, is there a recording available of the Strauss opening music you used to use?
Oh, sure. That was a standard Boston Pops.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. That was called Bahn Frei, B-A-H-N, F-R-E-I, which means really roughly clear track or fast road or whatever. Free road.
Thank you. Did you have the same engineer with you every night? Or she talked to him a lot?
I didn't. There were at times they would change. You know how this shit.
But you invented him and made him a character.
More or less, yes. Half of the engineers, when I would be doing my show, didn't hear anything. They'd sit there and read Allied radio catalog.
Engineers are famous for that.
Terrible.
We have a minute before news and a full hour to go. Why? Why will an engineer, no matter how funny
just like
you
stage
are,
hands. Listen,
no matter who's on, why?
We used to work, when I was working on Broadway, the stagehands would sit in the back and play cards while Laurence Olivier is out there doing Hamlet, because they feel a little bug that these people are making it, I think. They're so close to it, and yet so far.
So technicians will be technicians.
Yeah, that's true. They're too close to, you might say, fame, and yet they're not part of it, and they resent it.
Our guest, excellent analysis. Our guest is Gene Shepherd. Mr. Shepherd, one of America's extraordinary wits. If we could pay him the highest compliment, he is a touch of our Mark Twain. Gene Shepherd's book, A Fistful of Fig Newtons, is published by Doubleday. His film, The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters, will be seen on March 16th on the American Playhouse on PBS. Tomorrow night, Jody Powell will be our special guest. Our new stations this week are KOTA in Rapid City, South Dakota, and WGBS Radio in Miami, Florida. By the way, this week on The Best of King, our guests will include Lieutenant Dan O'Graham. We'll talk about nuclear energy. And James Rouse, who's America's number one city planner and recently the subject of a cover piece in Time magazine. This interview with Mr. Shepherd will also be heard on a Best of King presentation. We're going to pause for the news and we'll be back with Gene Shepherd in Washington, D.C. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System, your network for news and sports.
52177. That's 703-685-2177. Let the connection ring. We'll answer when it's your turn. And now, Network Radio's number one interviewer, Larry King.
Thank you, Fred Lowry. Our special guest tonight is the one and only Gene Shepherd. If America didn't have him, we'd probably have to invent him. His book is A Fistful of Fig Newtons. His presentation of The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters will appear March 16th on the American Playhouse on PBS. Tomorrow night, Jody Powell, former press secretary to Jimmy Carter, and we're welcoming aboard this week KOTA in Rapid City, South Dakota, and WGBS in Miami, Florida. We're going to go right back to the calls for Gene Shepherd, Cranston, Rhode Island. Hello.
Hello, Larry.
Hi.
Thank you so much for having Gene Shepherd on. It's been a dream of mine for years to just even be in almost the same room with him, I feel. I never had the opportunity to listen to you on WOR because I'm from Rhode Island, but Channel 2 in Boston ran a series called Gene Shepard's America, and that's where I got acquainted with you. And it seemed like when you were talking earlier in the first hour that you didn't think that, you know, I got the impression that the show wouldn't go on television. And
who said that?
Well, you know, you were talking...
Oh, well, Gene Shepard's America as a show was a very different kind of show than I did on radio.
Yeah, but some of the stories were there, you know?
Well, yeah, but it was a whole different kind of thing. We had production and... sure, my personality's the same. I'm not going to be a different person, but that show was beautifully edited. You know, very expensive show to
do. Never seen a better show.
Well, thank you. You know, that show, the American Film Institute here in Washington is going to do a retrospective on my film work, and part of it will be that Gene Shepard's America series, as well as The Phantom of the Open Hearth, and one of my earliest shows called... Rear Bumper will be done, and a thing I once did on Channel 9 in New York, which was called Shepherd Unleashed, and shortly after I did it, they wanted to do that, too.
Will these be on public television?
No, this is going to be American Film Institute here in Washington. It's going to be at the Kennedy Center. It's not on television, no. It's a film institute thing.
Well, I wish there was some way we could, up here in Rhode Island, maybe you come to Brown or something like that, but anything at all. Just
I have played Brown, by the way, in the past.
You have?
Yes. There is some talk, however, of reviving Gene Shepard's America. PBS is after.
Oh, that'd be terrific. Hey, thanks very much.
Thank you for calling.
Bridgewood, New Jersey for Gene Shepard. Hello.
Yes, good morning, good morning.
Morning.
Oh, please bear with me. My heart is just pounding. And for a little old lady like me... Oh, you cannot top yourself with having this wonderful, wonderful man on.
Thank you.
I thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have been a kingaholic ever since you started here in New York. And
thank
believe
you.
Me, years back, I was a Gene Shepard-aholic.
Hmm.
Because he was under my pillow. That's the only reason why I had two children only. I loved you, adored you. You were the only competition my husband ever had.
Shepard was a very early birth control.
As much as I love you. Oh, there's out of all your wonderful friends that have called you, that love you so, they did not say my three gorgeous stories.
What was that?
Well, your father's lamp.
Oh, the lady's leg lamp.
Yes.
Yes, that was a short story out of In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash. Right.
Yes.
The Birth of Pop Art.
Pardon?
It was called The Birth of Pop Art.
Yes, yes.
About the father getting the lamp.
I saw it finally on public television not so long ago. You just mentioned it to your last caller. And then the other one was your father's hat with the hockey. The hat trick.
Yes, that's right.
Oh,
when he jumped up and threw his hat out and other things.
Well, as I said, so many, all are wonderful, but the one you will never top,
as
much as I love you, is your uncle's prefab.
Oh, well, that was not my uncle. That was Harry Gertz.
Oh, I thought it was your uncle.
Oh, no.
All these years I've been...
My uncle was one of the guys that was helping him put it together with drinking the beer and putting the prefab house up.
It was fantastic.
And the rain came down and they all left him with his house in pieces.
I heard that. I loved it because I sat in the kitchen and did everybody's dishes in the whole apartment house when I lived in Brooklyn. Yes, I lived near your old neighborhood and you with your wonderful Carvel story.
Thank
you. The minute I heard you say, my God, there's... another Mr. Shepard. So
highly honored.
I love you both. God bless you both. I'm so glad I've lived long enough and in this era to be able to hear you two wonderful men.
Well, thank
you. Keep up your work. God bless you.
Thank you very much.
What a digger, wasn't she?
Boy, keep knocking like that. Don't call him, lady. Minneapolis
wonderful.
With Gene Shepard. Hello.
Good morning, Larry and Mr. Shepard.
Good morning, Minneapolis.
Mr. Shepard, I don't know if you're aware of the WCCR radio station's Steve Cannon.
No, I'm not.
Okay. He has three characters. I just want to rattle off their names. Morgan Mundane, Ma Linger, and Backlash LaRue. Three characters, completely different characters. And I was wondering, there's a lot of people that believe that those four people are in that.
Well, what can I, are you, why don't you call him? I mean.
No, my question is,
yeah.
do you think people are believing more in radio? And do you think radio is becoming a more popular medium? Do you think it's coming back?
Well, I think there is a, yes, I do think radio is showing a lot of surges in the upswing department. Although I do think America has become so showbizized that they really do believe, for example, most people when they were back in the 60s, they believed that every rock group that sang was singing their philosophy, not just singing a song. I do think that America is becoming so crazed with showbiz that we won't be happy until Paul Newman is running the FBI. You know, he's such a good cop, you know, he has to run the FBI.
And you think radio is coming back?
I don't know. It is showing signs, wouldn't you say, Larry?
Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, a great year in 81. There's a revitalization, certainly, in network radio. There's a great need for talent, however. There is a sparsity of great radio.
You know, may I say something on that order? That radio talent, I'm talking about talent.
Pure talent. Now.
Yes, the ability to create a picture on the air and all, is quite rare and always has been, even during the great days of radio.
There are a lot of professionals and there are broadcasters who sound better than others, but creative people, people who really do something with what they do, are rare. Now, if you can come up with a lot more software, as they call it, that's the talent, we're called software.
We're called software.
The hardware is all there, then radio's ready for you. And we got to take a break, and we'll be right back with Gene Shepherd following these messages. My guest is the brilliant Gene Shepherd, Brooklyn, New York. I'm sorry. Hello.
Good morning, Larry and Gene.
Good morning.
Special treat. Gene, I have a stamp and a coin collection here, and I even have a couple Kruger rants. But the one thing I keep behind lock and key are 482 90-minute tapes, 45 minutes on each side of programs that I take from WOR, which I cherish. I really do.
Boy, that's going to be worth some money.
I have some
collection of them. I really do.
Wow.
And I got you three books. I even got a glossy photo that you sent me.
Do you know that that I used to get letters from a club in England that would exchange tapes with each other? And there was a guy in Texas that had a catalog of all my shows that he had recorded off the air by subjects, Army stories.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Schwartz stories. Well, it was an international thing where they would trade these tapes back and forth. And I thought to myself, my Lord, you know, it's getting out of hand, Larry.
Well, what I wanted to ask you, I saw you twice at Carnegie Hall, by the way, which I thought was great.
By the way, the producer of that show is sitting right here at this table with us tonight.
Yes, I saw her. I remember.
She produced that. And wasn't it a brilliantly produced show?
That's right.
What's the question?
I consider you one of probably the greatest humorists in our time, anyhow. But I think that your programs were also informative. Many of the programs were serious, and I think you were saying things that people wanted to hear with, like, suspicions confirmed. And I was often wondering why you were not on TV here in the New York City area on Channel 13. We had you out on Channel 21 on Long Island. I did that Shepherd's Pie program. I could not pick that up. Why that was not here on 13?
Well, Channel 13, that's a political thing. They were having problems with the... See, that originated in the New Jersey public television system. And I don't know why 13 didn't carry it.
Thank you. Jersey has no commercial television.
No, that's right.
Los Angeles with Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Do I get equal time? I was supposed to be on after the commercial.
All right, go ahead.
You're costing me money, and I have I have no complaints, only that this is my first. Thank you, Larry, for that baby tender story. You were hilarious.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. Gene, I'm one of the truth is stranger than fictions. I don't like disabled. I don't like the word handicapped. But so we'll say I'm a partial shut-in. And my phone is my one luxury. And then I do part-time telephone soliciting to pay for it. So that this is my first time, I must confess my ignorance. This is the first time I've ever heard of you, and I laugh right out loud during the X-Lax story.
Thank you.
I stayed up way past my bedtime. They serve breakfast at 7:30 at this boarding care home, and I've stayed up way past my bedtime, and in order to find out if they took the box. Well, you told that while I was listening. So I got the end of that. Now I'd like to know, I have a blind friend. I met her through Braille, friendly visitors. I'm a friendly visitor.
What's the question?
Could she get your Braille talking book, and can I find your books in the library?
Yes, my books are in most libraries.
What's your last name?
Shepherd, just the way the word shepherd is spelled.
H-E-P-A-R-D?
No, S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D. That's the way shepherd is spelled.
H-E-R-D?
Yeah, just like shepherd with sheep, you know.
They're in all the libraries. We go to Sonora Hills, Colorado. Hello.
Hey, Shepherd.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I'm from Plainfield, New Jersey.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
And
That's awful, yes.
I just finished reading your book.
Yeah.
And I got...
Which book did you read?
The new one.
Oh, yeah.
The new one. Yeah, and I got to the story after the X-Lax story, The Light at the End of the Tunnel, and I tell you, anybody who appreciates the great piece of junk art that the flagship is, it's all right in my book.
Oh, the New Jersey flagship, sailing forever.
And the Leaning Tower of Pisa, too.
Moving towards Manhattan forever on Route 22. It never reaches it.
Yeah, well, Route 22 I kind of wonder about anyway.
Well, thank you. Did you enjoy the book?
That was great. Read it in one night. Whipped right through it.
Just sold a lot of books for him, sir.
Thank you.
But anyway, what I meant to ask you is I heard from somebody that you're on a Charles Mingus record.
That's right.
Which one is it?
The Clown.
The Clown.
Atlantic Records. Yes, well, I'm a vocal on it.
Oh, really? Do you do a reading? Or?
Well, you'd have to pick it up. It's a very curious record. It's kind of a...
It's hard to find.
It's a very hard to find record, and it's a collector's item. It's called The Clown.
Oh, yeah. I forget. One more thing.
And Charlie was an old friend of mine, by the way.
Yeah, really?
Yes.
Because I've heard all sorts of different things from him from different people, because I know a couple of... jazz musicians, not just...
Well, they know about me, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, not you.
What's the question?
Well, I've talked to other people about him. I just what Gene knows about Charlie Mingus.
You want me to tell you what I know about him? Well, that's a long story, and we don't have time for that.
Great town. Philadelphia with Gene Shepherd. Hello.
How do you do, gentlemen? I'm calling from the University of Pennsylvania.
Hi.
And I want to tell Mr. Shepherd that I've enjoyed his stories a lot. I just want to know... Was there ever a Daphne Bigelow or a Josephine Kalsnowski? And if so, what are they doing now?
Well, there was never any specific... all of us have a Daphne Bigelow in our mind.
Yeah, I agree.
The ultimate girl. You agree?
Yes.
Well, and Josephine Kalsnowski is the one who always is living down the street, who has vaguely foreign ways. You could smell stuffed cabbage when you walk past her house, and she seems unbelievably sexy.
It was also nice to know that... growing up in high school is the same as it was in about 1939.
It's always the same.
They're always Daphne Bigelows. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. They're all Daphne Bigelows now. Little Falls, New Jersey. Hello.
Hello, Chef.
How you doing?
Oh, wonderfully. I'm going to marry a Josephine, but that's another story.
You're going to marry Josephine?
Kinda.
You missed out on Daphne, huh?
No Daphne. It's too hard to deal with.
That's right.
Anyway.
That's like getting involved marrying a wearing blender.
You got it.
Right.
Who's that? The good side of the world is essentially you have brought more happiness and more professional and personal pleasure through your stories, but also what they caused in the form of careers, in the form of hobbies, communications, ham radio, computers, all these things have... broadcasting, all have been, caused by you through your stories.
It's a sickening realization, that's true.
Isn't it true? We're all jaded. he did it, folks. The other thing is, do you remember 2 years ago at the Dayton Amateur Radio Convention?
I do indeed. I performed at the final dinner there.
You remember the four crazy guys who jumped up on the podium?
Yes, I do.
Were you one of those guys? I was the one who read it, Slick Lives and all.
Are you the one I hit in the mouth?
No, you're the one who calmed the guy who was chairman of the convention while we chatted.
Sure, okay. What's your call,
really,
by the way?
By that. I got flack from that. I got nasty letters.
Excuse
from
me,
Ohio.
What is your call?
WB2CAM.
Good. What bands do you work?
Oh, everything from 80 up to about 1296.
All right, I'm on 15 meters. You can hear me at about 21350 most weekday afternoons.
Oh, well, I work. You know, I'm not like some people.
Oh, cut work one day. And it's worth it. Linden, New Jersey. Hello.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for having Gene Shepherd on. This is great.
My pleasure.
And
it is great, isn't it? It's kind of like old home week, isn't it?
Oh, listen, Gene, I'm one of the kids. I'm 22 now, and I grew up listening to you. I've listened to you on the radio ever since.
I grew up doing a darn show. Go ahead.
Well, I live just about a stone's throw away from Route 22. And the previous caller mentioned our great flagship.
What a terrible admission to make.
Oh, come on.
Night after night, the rumble of trucks and the crash of thundering cars rolling over the
little pollution.
The leaning tower of pizza.
Oh, come on. It's a great place.
And the Capone hamburger heaven down the street. I know 22.
I have your book, A Fistful of Fig Newtons, and it's an absolutely great book. But I keep wondering.
Yeah.
A lot of it is about New Jersey, and I keep wondering how do people in Wyoming react to that?
Don't you understand that every man has a New Jersey in his mind, just like every man traditionally has a picture of hell in his head? So if I were to wake up a guy in say, Boise, Idaho at 2 in the morning and say, New Jersey, he'd say, oh, yeah, yeah, I see it now. So everybody, Jersey is the universal state in America.
Thank you. Long Island, New York with Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I used to listen to you. Another one used to listen to you on WOR a long time ago. My questions are, if you ever plan on doing any radio work again in the New York area?
No,
and
no. To answer that question right away, no.
How about if you're going to be coming up to any of the schools on the island, Post or...
No, the next school I'll be playing will be Princeton. Will be June 6th.
When next will you be playing Carnegie Hall or around there?
Well, I don't think I'll be playing Carnegie Hall. You know, Carnegie Hall has gotten so incredibly expensive that they priced themselves right out of
the
market.
What do they charge for a night?
Well, at the time we did the show, what was it, Lee? Can you, she's going to write it down.
All wives, the radio performers, are mute.
If you're curious, this is the girl that produced the show.
She's now writing down the figure.
Yes.
And not knowing radio, she's causing dead air.
Yeah, why aren't you talking? Well, she's not going to say. Yeah, all right, here, say something.
So, again, I want to know.
Hold on, here it is. This is Mrs. Shepherd.
No, the last show that we produced there, the house sold out. Absolutely, they turned people away. It cost then, this is five, six years ago, about $28,000 to produce.
You've got to really check
it out. And you've got to kill them on the ticket prices. And with Gene's audience, there's lots of kids now, I can't use Carnegie Hall anymore.
In other words, it's gotten to the point now, if you're going to play Carnegie Hall and make a reasonable, even break even.
And that includes the advertising and all, but still, wow.
You have to charge in the vicinity of $20 a ticket.
And you can't, it's got to be Sinatra.
And you have to sell out. Well, you know, it's just not worth it. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd, for appearing with us.
Who do we have now?
We are going to pause for news headlines, a word from your local stations. We have a half hour to go with one of America's great wits, fantastic storyteller, brilliant writer. The new book is Fistful of Fig Newtons. And a filmmaker as well. The film The Great American Fourth of July and Other Disasters will appear March 16th on the American Playhouse on PBS. Tomorrow night, Jody Powell will be our guest. Our new stations this week are WGBS in Miami, KOTA Rapid City, South Dakota. By the way, for you baseball fans, Earl Weaver will be with us the night of Monday, April 5th, opening night of the baseball season. And that same week, the former Vice President of the United States, Walter Mondale, will also be aboard. We'll be back with our remaining half hour with Gene Shepherd, and we'll get to as many calls as we can in that half hour. This is the Larry King Show in Washington, D.C., and this is the Mutual Broadcasting System, your network for news and sports.
From the nation's capital, you're listening to the Larry King Show. Portions of this program are repeated in the Pacific time zone. Once again, Network Radio's number one interviewer, Larry King.
Our guest, and we've had a great hour and a half of phone calls for him following an hour interview, is Gene Shepherd. His new book is Fistful of Fig Newtons with Gene Shepherd, Tabor City, North Carolina. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Shepherd.
Yeah.
I'm just got into radio, and I really like to do characters, but I can't think of that many. Now, how do you...
Are you sure you're in the right business?
Well, I'm trying. I'm just getting started. How do you go... You said your characters were fictional.
Yeah.
How do you go about coming up with these characters?
Sheer talent.
Just come...
No way talent can explain talent.
I couldn't not say to you, well, I did it. I'll tell you what I do. I bought this chart that comes by mail from Fargo.
And the Henny Youngman joke book, you know that.
Of course, yes. And a thousand laughs from
Captain... letters, tips on public speaking.
A thousand laughs from Captain Billy's whiz bang.
I can't miss that. Red Ryder gun.
Exactly. They're all good.
Sort of a blank.
And I want to suggest one thing every morning. Deep knee bends.
Deep knee bend.
That'll help, yeah.
All those things. Now you got 9 tips from a master, sir.
A lot of Wheaties. And take Castoria every night.
Oh, no.
And mail in all box tops.
Babies cry for it.
Thank you. We go to New York City with Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Hello, Shep.
I'm here.
Excelsior, you fathead.
Seltzer bottle, you slob. Go ahead. Oh, by the way, that's a code word between us.
I gather.
It's the Mystic Knights of the Sea, we call our group. Go ahead.
One of our favorite. Listen, I've got a question and a presentation.
By the way, who was in the Mystic Knights of the Sea? There's a piece of trivia for you.
No,
it wasn't. Go ahead. What's your question?
Well, first of all, I'm from Flemington, New Jersey.
Oh, sure. I know that town. Awful, and, yes.
Yeah, and raised there and listening to your show.
Route 31 goes right through it.
Sure do.
What's the question, sir?
And it goes to Clinton, too.
What's the question, sir?
That's the way I'd like you to repeat the date you're going to be playing in Princeton, Clinton.
I will be playing in Princeton June 6th.
And in Clinton.
Clinton. August 14th.
August 14th.
Wait, I'm getting the real answer here now. She's writing it down. It is July 17th.
July 17th.
July 17th at Clinton.
And, Shep, I'd like to present to you from all your host of listeners a brass Fig McGee with bronze Oakley's palm.
I am.
Appreciation for your service and hilarity.
A genuine brass Fig McGee.
Thank you so much.
By the way, that's from my show that I used to present brass figligies to people.
Atlanta, Georgia. Hello.
Hello, Chef.
Yeah.
Hi. Listen, I listened to you on WOR when I was growing up in high school in New York, and I researched your theme song, and I believe it was called A Bonfire Gallop.
Well, that was one...
By E. Strauss. I thought it
Yes. What's your question?
Okay, the question is... Getting back to what you were talking about earlier in the show about storytelling.
Yeah.
I'm a lyricist, and a lyricist is a storyteller.
Sort of.
Or have you ever made a contribution to a song, a pop tune?
Yes. If you watch my my film this week, you will hear a song I wrote.
Oh, really? What's the name?
It's The Ballad of Ludlow Kissel. I'm serious.
It's 1 week from tonight.
1 week from tonight, you listen to it, and you'll discover why Barry Manilow tonight is not sleeping well.
The Ballad of Ludlow Kissel. Do you have your kazoo?
No, I don't have. It's back in the hotel.
Back in the hotel.
I wish I brought it with me. I usually carry it with me in case of emergency.
Bayside, New York. Hello.
Hey, Chef.
Yeah.
Celsius, you fathead.
Celsius bottle. How you doing?
I have two quick statements. And a question.
Fire it.
You once said that cars would be graded according to their performance.
Did I say that?
Yes, and be able to go on specific highways.
Oh, yes, I did say that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right, I remember that.
I'm waiting for it to happen.
It will.
Also, could you possibly... do one show a week on radio to get the addicts together.
Well,
I think Mutual ought to call Gene Shepherd and with a package.
If something came along really just right, you know, I would be delighted to do it, but that I don't see that in the future.
Orange, New Jersey, hello.
Yeah, hello, Chef and Larry.
Yeah.
How you doing? I want to thank you guys for the best birthday present a guy could get, hearing Gene on the radio.
Well, it's been fun, hasn't it? The time has gone so fast, I'm sick and, you know, I'm bugged that it's almost
Gene,
over.
It makes me feel good because Gene has really had a good time.
Really? Really? It's been great. Now, do you have a question?
Yeah, Gene, can you refresh my memory on two stories you told a long time ago about Zudok?
Yes.
I think he was a buddy of your old dad there.
Yeah.
And can you tell me which of your friends, was it Schwartz or Flick or Bruner, who got his tongue stuck to the telephone pole?
It was Flick.
Right.
He did it at the instigation of Schwartz and well, actually myself.
Uh-huh.
You see, he said one day, he says, you know, the temperature was 20 below zero, as it always is in Indiana most of the year. And he said, did you hear about that story they were saying the other day, if you put your tongue on a metal fence post, it will stick to it? And Schwartz says, that's dumb. It's nobody. That's absolutely not true. And he says, but I heard it was. And Schwartz says, well, try it. I'll show you how stupid you are. You believe anything. So Flick goes over, puts his tongue on the metal fence pole, and 2.5 hours later, the fire department came and hosed him down with hot water and got him out of that predicament. And Flick has never been the same since. Turned to drink.
Can you tell me, where are you going to be in Clinton, New Jersey?
I'm going to be at the museum in Clinton. Of course, where am I going to be? Clinton's 1.5 blocks long, you dummy. Where am I going to be in Clinton?
Ask the gas station. Houston, Texas. Hello.
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
Fine. Oh, great.
I just want to tell you, it was great hearing you tonight. You got me through my NYU days. Now it seems to help us here in Texas, too.
Yeah. Well, what can we say today? Do you have any questions?
Not really. I did, and they just went away.
Well, you just
for
wanted
calling.
To call and say hello.
Manchester, New Hampshire, for Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Hello, Shep.
Yeah.
SWA1MYQ. You guys had the hearing of the hams tonight here from the sounds of it.
Oh, all kinds of hams calling in, yeah.
Yes. I think I talked with you one time on the way up to a campground in Maine about.
Right, right. On the dairy repeater.
On the dairy repeater, right. And. I was going to QSL, but apparently your address is not the same with the call book anymore.
No, I'm operating under false colors.
False colors, huh?
Yeah. Well, what can we ask? What can we say tonight?
You have a question.
Yes. Apparently you made a big hit at the Dayton Ham Festival there with you, and you must speak at other ham fests as well. I'd like to know where I could get some recordings of some of the times you've spoken at ham radio gatherings.
They are not available, as far as I know.
Only from the hams themselves, huh?
Yeah, just guys recording at their tables, that's it, you know?
I did get a very weak recording from someone, but I didn't know what you might have some out there.
Typical ham doesn't know how to work a tape recorder. We'll see you.
All right, we'll be back with more of Gene Shepherd following these messages. With the one and only Gene Shepherd, the book is A Fistful of Fig Newtons, and the television film is The Great American 4th of July, 1 week from tonight, on the American Playhouse on PBS, Charlottesville, Virginia. Hello.
Hello, Larry and Gene.
Hi.
Gene, I'm one of the kids that grew up with you. I'm 65.
Oh, yeah?
First started out at the Red Garter in Greenwich Village.
No, I was never there. I was down the street.
Down the street.
They were a block away from us.
I wanted to ask you, Gene, if you remember the night you entertained the Nassau Surgical Society on Long Island.
Oh, that was great. That was a fantastic evening. The doctors.
The buzzer went off?
Sure. I remember that very well. I do a lot of shows, Larry, for special groups, and I entertained this group of doctors, a very special audience. And did some humor that...
tailored to them.
Oh, was great. We had a great time. But what can I say?
Well, we made you an honorary member, Gene. I was wondering how your surgery was coming along. And
Yes, I'll tell you, I'm beginning to specialize now in knees. The cartilage work I'm doing.
In fact, you scratched off the word honorary and did three operations.
They did. They gave me a diploma making me an honorary surgeon.
Minneapolis for Gene Shepherd. Hello.
Hi, Gene. Good to talk to you.
Good to hear you.
Yet another kid who grew up with you.
Yeah.
Met him all over America, Gene.
Oh, yeah. You caught me by surprise tonight. I turned on the radio to hear Larry, and here's Gene Shepherd talking, telling a story. I thought you were back on the air. You really fooled me. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
What are you going to be doing after this film that's on PBS?
I
think you're the great undiscovered talent in America, and anything you touch will probably turn to gold. What's coming up?
Well, I've got another film after this one. I'm already starting work on it. I'm starting work on another book. You see, this new book has just been out, and I'm meeting with my publisher this week, and we're laying out the plans for my next one. And I also am entertaining an offer from PBS to renew my television series called Gene Shepherd's
right.
America.
I remember it.
So I'm hard at work.
Hey.
Yeah.
You remember the show you did at Town Hall back
in '68
or so?
Do I remember it? Yeah.
I saw that show.
That was a great night, wasn't it?
Oh, that was wild. I was about 13.
And you remember we played the kazoo?
Oh, sure.
The entire audience played the kazoo.
I still have that.
They went crazy. Do you still have it?
I still have it.
Well, we passed out kazoos, and the point of this was, you see. Now, let me tell you what this, that was a bit of humor, Larry. I said, you know, we all have a secret desire to say we played at Town Hall. And I said,
right.
and as they came in, each got a kazoo, and we all played in unison the Sheik of Araby.
Wasn't quite in unison.
Yeah, 2,000 people. I says, now forever, you can always say, I played at Town Hall, and you did.
Thank you very much. With Gene Shepherd, Sacramento, California.
See, what you do is sit in the corner and look sad, and you say, oh, God, my Town Hall days are long since past, but yes, go ahead.
Sacramento, hello.
Gene.
Yes.
Yes, okay, well, I don't know of any higher compliment to pay a man than to say that I plagiarized you at least a couple times during college. I used to read Car and Driver magazine when you were a columnist
there. Oh, yeah, 6 years I wrote for him.
Yeah, I especially liked your column on the Lionel train and the owner's manual thing. If you remember.
That was a funny bit. I remember that, yeah.
That's funnier.
I did a whole column on owner's manuals you get with things.
Yeah,
now, they hint at disaster. They say, in case of extreme trouble, inflate left rear, and you could just see yourself in a driving rainstorm reading the damn book. Yeah, go ahead.
Especially the thing about the replacing the seatbelts in a 240Z.
Yeah, it's just a case of sudden impact. The seatbelts could be replaced. I said, my God, I can see you going through the roof.
Yeah. By your beneficiaries.
As for my question, are you still keep in contact with Brock Yates?
No, we were never friends, really. I mean, I knew Brock, but there's no, you know, he was in the magazine. It's always thought in people's mind that all the people in a magazine are all friends.
In fact, the
I know he did an article once about, he was talking about, I'm an old veteran of the Cannonball Rally.
Yeah.
And he did an article once about the movies that came out about the, you know, Gumball Rally and that other one they did.
Yeah, but what's your question about Brock, yeah?
Well, anyway, he did the articles about, you know, essentially how absurd it was to do the movies on the rally. And then he turns around and
does a movie on the rally. Okay, you know, that's a
Hollywood story. Raleigh, North Carolina, hello.
Well, I just wanted to say that I've listened to you since I was about 10.
Yeah.
And I used to live in New Jersey.
Doesn't she sound great? She sounds about 12 now. Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't know radio existed until I first heard you. It was the first time I ever started listening to radio. And I was wondering if you can be in the Raleigh area.
Raleigh's a great little town. I played Meredith College there once.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'll be in the Raleigh area. However, if you watch my movie... It's going to be the 16th.
1 week from tonight.
Yeah, March 16th on PBS. It's Public Broadcasting Television.
Yeah, well, I watch them a lot.
Well, you'll see the opening scenes were shot near Raleigh.
Thank you very much. Miami, Florida. Hello.
Oh, hi, Larry and Gene.
Hi.
I just thought you might like to hear from the other end of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Despite the fact that I did not grow up listening to you because I'm 47 and been in Miami all these years. I just do want you to know that you're the reason my husband made me sleep on the couch every Saturday night.
Great Scott.
Because we had your syndicated program Saturday night, which is really Sunday morning.
Yeah, I remember that show. On WKAT.
WKAT
broadcasted all night long.
That the poor soul woke up all the time. And I thought you'd just get a kick out of knowing that.
Thank you. I used to listen to that show every Saturday night. They would take all the 5 hours that Gene would do on WOR during the week and play them Saturday night, midnight to 5.
Yeah, back to back. What a weird idea.
We'll be back. Well, you got to hear that trumpet call to the post 5 times a night. 10 times a night. It played at the close, too.
Yeah.
We'll be back with our remaining moments with Gene Shepherd following this message. Our remaining moments with Gene Shepherd, Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Hello.
Good evening, Larry.
Hi.
Shep, I wrote you when I was a child about the guy in my backyard who erected birdhouses, was carpeting, and toilets. I'll tell you, tonight on the Jupiter Effect night, to hear your voice again, is really soothing.
That's right. If the world ends tomorrow, the last person you may have heard was Gene Shepherd.
Wouldn't it
and
be
I must
fantastic?
Ask Shepherd for an opinion on that. We'll get in a couple more calls, but we do have the Jupiter effect. It is but hours away. All these planets are going to be lined up against the sun. What's going to happen?
The Earth is going to come to an end.
Of course. I mean, you have no doubt about that.
It's all over.
And what are you going to do the last few hours?
Well, I think I may go down. There's an all-night McDonald's down there. I may get myself a couple of Big Macs.
That could be the Big Mac would be the final touch for you.
Well, you know, I've been resisting that temptation for a long time. I figured if there's no more, you know, a couple of hours to go, I might.
What about the wife? What about going
somewhere?
I might
even go out and get myself a double broiler. No, we're not going to go out and celebrate. That is celebrating to me.
Double broiler.
Well, I've had Big Mac attacks. regularly. You know.
Okay, Gene says it is ending. New York City, hello.
Hello?
You can take that as that's official. You heard it on the radio.
That's right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I have a four-line verse I just wrote for Gene and then a question.
Go ahead.
Shoot.
Even those who heard him for the first time used to say it was hard to get off the hook. Hence, I predict that people will flock to buy Shepherd's new book.
Well, gee, I hope you're right. Thank you.
The Flock and Shepherd. Okay. Here's the question. I had lunch with Frederick Ewing the other day.
Frederick Roland Ewing.
Yeah.
An eminent British historian, of course.
And he commented, what a wonderful country and western singer you are, even though your voice often sounds like a man. And he wanted to know whether you'll be doing any concerts in the New York City area where I might be able to see.
Did you talk to his wife, Marjorie, that eminent horsewoman from the North Country? Well, we'll explain off the air. Yes, I will be playing Princeton, New Jersey, July 6th. Get down June 6th.
Oh, I don't drive. Is there anything in New York City, a book signing or anything?
Not in New York City that I know of in the first.
No midnight book signings?
No, I'd love to have one, though.
Jim,
if I could talk Double Day into it, yes, I would.
It was a great bit.
Thank you.
Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Hello.
Sheriff, how are you?
How you doing?
I grew up listening to you.
They all say that.
My mother introduced me to you. I couldn't imagine what she would be laughing at over the kitchen sink in her chenille bathrobe with the aluminum rheostat.
You had a very hip mother.
I did. Listen.
Yeah?
How can I keep track of you? I used to follow your concerts around. As a matter of fact, my first date with my wife, I took her to see you at Bloomfield College. And we made a semi-career of following you around to Wagner and Seton Hall.
Well, I play. You know, I've been concentrating more on film and television rather than playing around New York. So we'll be on the air. Watch my film March 16th, and I'm playing Princeton June 6th, and I'll be around, you know.
All right, a couple more calls for Gene Shepherd, Delray, Florida. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Larry.
Yes.
Yes. I've been listening to you for 3 years over WIOD 610 in Delray.
Now we're on WGBS 710.
Thank you. And I cannot get you clearly.
Well, that would put up an antenna.
Yeah, WGBS has a very powerful signal that gets right into Delray. So there's something wrong with the radio, or try WPBR Palm Beach or WDBO Orlando. New York City, hello.
Hello, Larry.
Hi.
Hey, Shep.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm walking around, yeah.
I'm Wacko from New York City.
Yeah.
And I did not grow up listening to you.
Fine. I'm glad to hear that.
But
that's refreshing.
I did hear you. I was one of the other freaks who heard you on KAT in Miami.
There you go.
And where can I hear that Philadelphia pothole story, hoagie story? I just love that, being an old Philadelphian.
Yeah, the Philadelphia pothole story. That was a great story. Where can you hear that?
Yeah. Don't you have some kind of clearinghouse of all your old stories, all your old radio
programs? Why don't you buy a copy of A Fistful of Fig Notons and read a few good ones in that one?
Yeah, but what a demand I've heard tonight for hearing some of your old radio programs.
It would be unbelievable. They ought to re-release those.
Well, what do you mean they ought to? I've got them. I could re-release them.
Why don't you?
It's not a they. Well,
I would hear you. I'd get together with a network, this network, some network, sit down and re-release those.
Well, I've got over roughly almost 2,000 shows.
Hey, listen, Shep, I'm going to let other people in this last minute. So
you're the last caller.
Where can I write you?
Well, you write me here in care of Larry.
Okay.
If you write to Gene Shepherd, care of us, we will see the mail is forwarded directly to him.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry.
Thank you. We only have about a minute and a half left, Gene. Are you on top of things? Would you say that this is the... No, by that I mean, is this the prime of Mr. Gene Shepherd?
I don't know. Only historians later will be able to say that. I mean, if anyone says I am now in my prime, he's in trouble.
Do you feel at the top of your game now?
Oh, yes. My backhand is improving. I'm
creatively, Shepherd.
I'm talking creatively, yes. I think I'm writing as well as I ever did. I think the script that I have on this movie is the best thing I've seriously ever done. And I'm so proud of it that when I read it back after we had finished it, it's a funny feeling. 6 months later when we're going to shoot it and I read it back, I really looked at it and I said, gee, did I do that, you know?
What's the secret of a successful marriage in the business you're in?
Well, hit her in the mouth occasionally.
You do hit her?
No. I would have to say, that...
Why is she nodding?
Our secret success story is that I think it's because we've always worked together.
Lisa's part of your life.
Yes, and she's a fine writer herself. She wrote a fine novel called The Show Gypsies. And she understands the problem of creativity and is part of it. So we work together. It's just like, you know.
Gene, after all these years, it's been an honor.
It's been an honor here, Larry, because I'll tell you this. You know, guys say a lot of things to you, but anybody who has forged a network show of the success and caliber of yours at this time in history, it's a remarkable achievement. Really.
Thank you so much.
Professionally. And a wonderful show, and I've loved it.
Gene Shepherd, his new book, it is published by Doubleday. The title, A Fistful of Fig Newtons. And 1 week from tonight, that's March 16th, Tuesday night, March 16th, on PBS's American Playhouse, The Great American 4th of July and Other Disasters, written by Gene Shepherd, who also appears in the production.